This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto news, exclusive interviews, real world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, we have a great show in store for you. If you're a car loving crazy like I am, then, well, then you've tuned into the right spot on the dial, or you're listening to the right podcast, you're having a sugar craving, or I don't know what it could be caused. Anything could be causing you to do what you're doing right now. Please just don't talk about it. Carl Brower. Carl, how you doing, man? Oh, dear me. I'm on a bit of a high right now because I just bought a brand new vehicle. So I'm on vehicle high. Yes, yeah, I'm floating well. On cloud nine. And we should talk about this for a few minutes. You've got a whole bunch of things teed up here. First of all, you're going to, just off of embargo, talk about the new Mustang Mach 1. Also, just off of embargo, the new Mitsubishi Outlander. You've got drive impressions. We talked about it last week. And then you've got a study from iccars.com that shows which cars to buy new versus used, which it should have been maybe which cars to buy used versus new. But no, you flipped it on us because you're trying to be confusing. That's what it is, Carl. I know you're kind of guy. Oh, sorry.
Gotta throw them, man. Gotta throw them for a loop whenever possible.
But I am on a high. I'll tell you why. Because, you know, you and me are very difficult guys to please. Would you say that? I mean, come on. Look at our cars we have. You know what I mean?
We're pretty picky, Alan.
Yeah,
we're pretty picky.
Pretty darn picky. So I bought a used Raptor with a 6.2 liter V8 with 32,000 miles on a 2012 model. I found the truck of my dreams. I thought, yes, because I don't have to pay a huge premium for this thing. A friend of mine owned it, an older guy. It took me years to buy this from him. I was hounding him and hounding him and hounding him. And I had it 6 months and I was getting 10.5 miles to the gallon. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then the price of gas started going up. I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Every time I get $100 for 3/4 of a tank. I can't take it, Carl. I can't take it. Anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah. I decided, you know what? Okay. As much as I love it, I had it for about, 8-9 months, whatever it is. I already stopped loving it because every time it's like you got to pay to play. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, when you go to play poker with your friends and you're playing for a buck or a quarter or whatever. But when you're at Vegas and you lose $1,000 on a hand, it's like, all right, enough of this. It's like every time I was going to the gas station, it was like, I'm losing at poker. What's going on here? Anyway, so I decided, you know, somebody wanted to buy it. And I thought, yep, I'll make a little money. All right. You know what? I need to go on a quest and buy something that I really, really want because the sun is shining. And you know me, Carl, I like convertibles. I've got two convertibles in my garage right now. And actually three if you count my Blazer because I never did put the top on from last year. Full convertible truck, a Blazer, 73 Blazer. But I just, you know, it's like I still got to get to where I'm going economically, one, safely, two, and in style, three, and, you know, something I enjoy driving, four. All these things, they got to fit into the spectrum, right? And my old Blazer, it's, you know, it's not economical. It's not, it leaks oil, and it's loud, and it's kind of all over the place. So that's not my favorite thing, even though I enjoy it. I enjoy it. But then I have a Thunderbird, a 2002 Thunderbird, and it's a boulevard cruiser, but you can't do anything in it except cruise a boulevard because it's just a little, you know, sports car. Then I have a BMW four-seater, a 328 convertible, but it's the same thing. It's like, okay, I can take four people, but I can't take my stuff. So I started looking really hard, and I've had my eyeball on the Jeep Gladiator for, I don't know, what's it been? 2 years and 2-3 years since they launched that thing. And but then when they launched this Mojave edition, which is the highest ticket Jeep Gladiator you can buy. It looks like, how do I even describe it? It looks like a premium or a luxury version of a Jeep Gladiator, which is the Wrangler truck, right? And I took it for a ride. I got one with the diesel, test drove it. The diesel just didn't have what I needed, even though it had good fuel economy. Damn it, it was good. Higher towing capacity. But I drove the 3.6 liter V6 engine with an 8-speed transmission. And I got to tell you, I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to put a Borla exhaust on it. I'm going to find a supercharger. This is it. Carl, I pulled the trigger, baby. Yesterday, I did. I bought it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And you won't be satisfied till it gets as bad as mileage as your Raptor got rid of.
Don't talk. Cut him off, quick. Don't talk like that. We'll be right back.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
Well, Carl had to be a buzzkill, didn't he? See, I'm talking about my new vehicle that, by the way, the Jeep Mojave gets 17 in the city, 22 on the highway. And I know if you drive like Alan Taylor drives, I probably am not going to get that kind of fuel economy. But I don't know, Carl. I'm just enjoying it. I took the two front sections of the top off, the hard top. And it's like having a convertible. I love it. By the way, for those who don't know who Carl Brower is, he is a automotive industry analyst. He's a contributor to Forbes Autos. He's North American Car, Truck, and SUV of the Year, juror and board member, and an analyst for IC Cars, also executive publisher for CarExpert.com. And he's my buddy, and he's on the show all the time. So, Carl, enough about my Jeep, because I will blather on too much about it. I've wanted a Jeep for a long time, so I finally got it. But I am interested in hearing, now that the embargo is up, about the new Mustang Mach 1. Not to be confused with what everybody is like, talking about, the Mach E. This is a Mach 1, coming back to our territory. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, this one goes back to the, some might say the proper use of the term Mach related to a Ford product. But yes, the Mach 1 is homage to the first year, 69 Ford Mustang Mach 1 that came out in 1969. Fastback, always a fastback model with at least a 351 V8 and oftentimes something much bigger like a 428. And this new one has a more powerful engine than the GT and a bunch of upgrades. And Ford has always described the Mach 1 from its beginning, earliest time, as a bridge between the GT with the V8 performance and the Shelby models with the super high performance, you know, V8s and a lot of suspension calibration and exterior badging. So this one fits right between those vehicles, and it's perfectly suited for that role because of the pricing as well as the capabilities. I drove it on Willow Springs, Streets of Willow racetrack. And just like the GT350 that I had pretty much the most fun I've ever had on a track with a couple of years ago, this new Mach 1 is very capable and, more importantly, very forgiving. Mm. So that there's all this great transitional warning as you're driving it, and it's fairly easy to manage even at its threshold of lateral grip, which I love because that means you can get out there and play when you get there versus being worried it's gonna bite you in the you-know-what. So really enjoyed circulating the car around the track, you know, 480 horsepower versus 460 in the standard GT. Mm. And then the rest of it's all a lot of Shelby stuff. It's got the Tremec 6-speed. If you get a 6-speed version that comes right out of the GT350, great transmission. Mm. But you can also get it with the 10-speed automatic, which you never could in the GT350. So for people who don't want to deal with three pedals and maybe let more than just themselves and the family enjoy the car outside the track days, it does have an automatic option. Neat looking. It's got these unique, you know, fascias and rear spoiler and hood treatment, so it looks pretty cool. And of course, it sounds fabulous. It's got that V8 engine in it and the 5-liter V8 that just sounds tremendous, and it'll redline at 7,500. So you end up using all those RPM before you have to shift because it sounds so glorious the higher it goes.
So is this to replace the GT350 that they've discontinued?
Pretty much. I mean, I don't know if it's really to replace it. I think it's to give you an alternative from that car. That's about 10 grand cheaper because that car was started at 63 and this one starts at 53. And of course, the GT500, which is still out, is 73. So this car's far less costly than either of the Shelbys were. And yet it's got a lot of the same characteristics that the Shelbys have. So if you're looking for value, as much performance bang as you can afford, and your budget is sub $60,000, this makes a very attractive offer.
Well, I will tell you, I still have not taken delivery of my GT500. I bought in August last year, serial number 8. Yes, I did. I pulled it again. But I just got a phone call from Gary Patterson over at Shelby saying they finally got all the stuff. Because, you know, I mean, all the automakers were affected, including Shelby American, to build their Carroll Shelby Special Edition, which is what I'm doing to my GT500, 2020 GT500. And they're going to start building it this week. Oh, baby.
Nice.
And I got the CSM number, the Carroll Shelby Manufacturing. I got number 8 to match my serial number. And Gary Patterson, who's the president of Shelby American, is looking to see if that's ever been done before, where there's an actual serial number that is matching the car number. I don't know.
Right.
Imagine if I get something that rare. All right, hang tight for a second. Carl's talking about a few cars he's been test driving, the new Mustang Mach 1, just off embargo. Next, we're going to talk a little bit about the Mitsubishi Outlander. These are brand new offerings, everybody. Stay with us. It's The Drive. Brembo has been stopping champions on the track as well as drivers like you and me on the street for over 50 years. To zero braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. Brembo, the choice of champions and consumers for over 50 years.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Well, because I'm on a diet, and this is by Fat Boy Slim. That's me right now. Carl, I've lost 16 pounds. I feel like a man. I feel like a man. You know why?
Nice.
I don't have my man boobs anymore. So I was in a little scary there, starting to have a figure like a girl. Anyway, yes, love handles and all. All right. Carl Brower joining us. Mach 1 he drove, liked it. What's not to like? The new Mitsubishi Outlander we talked about with Brian Armstead last week. It was embargoed, and we were dancing on, you know, can't talk about the drive capabilities of it, only what does it look like. And we touched a little bit on the fact that the new Mitsubishi Outlander is in some fashion a cousin to the Nissan Rogue. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say.
Okay. And I actually, my wife just got a Nissan Rogue. My wife buys a new car. I should say I buy her a new car about every... I don't know, about every 5 years or so. And she went car shopping, and she really fell in love with the Nissan Rogue. And it's got this Pilot Assist 360 that'll kind of, it's almost a little bit like self-driving. It'll keep you in your lane. It has Distronic cruise control, so it'll, you know, you can take your foot off the pedals, and you just have to kind of keep one hand on the wheel. And it does like everything else. So if you're on a long trip, it makes the driver fatigue a lot less because you're not having to worry about much of anything, really. Keep your eye on the road, keep your hand on the wheel, and it pretty much does everything else. If you're getting up behind somebody, it'll slow down. If they get out of the way, it'll speed up. I think this kind of stuff is awesome, and it's not self-driving, but it's on the way to giving you that option where you can do less work. I guess it's the best way to say it. I imagine this Outlander has that same stuff if it's you know, somehow of a relative to the Nissan Rogue. But Mitsubishi and Nissan have been in bed together for a long time, haven't they?
Actually, it's fairly recent. You know, 2016 was when there was a renegotiation of Nissan and Renault and Mitsubishi's relationship, and essentially Mitsubishi became part of the alliance.
Well, that's 5 years. That's a long time in the car industry.
Yeah, although, but remember how long it takes for a car to go from, like, concept to final production. So yeah, this is true. Really the first full fruit of the labor of that joint alliance. And it's exactly what you said, in that everything from the drivetrain, 181 horsepower, 2.5 liter engine, that's the same specs in the Outlander and the Rogue, you know, to the technology for the driver assist systems, like the smart cruise control, lane keeping, and all very much identical. But the good news is Mitsubishi needed this. You know, Nissan has been and remains a relatively strong brand, and it's got a lot of new products coming out in the last few months and in the next year. So they're doing fine. Mitsubishi was not doing fine. They were needing some help for the last several years. And this Outlander, you drive it, and whether it's the solidity of the platform that you sense and the refinement of the drivetrain, and the mileage that it gets, and the technology that it has access to now, like we talked about, these were not possible from the old Mitsubishi pre-Renault-Nissan alliance. Right. And now the Outlander is a very strong reflection of what a global alliance allows you to do, and price the starting point at $25,000. Remember, this car comes standard with a third row seat. So unlike the Rogue, there's actually a third row. Not the biggest third row. You wouldn't want to stick you or me back there,
but kids,
you can put
kids.
People back there.
Right.
Yeah. And just cool, kind of certainly unique. Some might say a little unorthodox for an end styling, but it's going to stand out on the road, which plenty of people like. But, you know, honestly, the interior design, very Land Rover-like from the kind of, you know, they got those knurled, you know, where they got the little kind of grooves and bumps on the switches that a lot of premium cars have. The Outlander's got that, to the drive mode selector right in the center console looks very Land Rover-like, but you can switch between different driving modes for the Outlander, you know, more aggressive of on-road and off-road modes.
Right.
So really just very premium. It's got a very premium look and feel to it, which would not be a trait or a description you'd normally use for Mitsubishi until recently.
So my only complaint with our Nissan that we got, the Nissan Rogue, and you can talk about drive impressions real quick, but we bought we thought we bought the SL, which is, you know, it's not the top of the line. I think they call it a platinum or premium or whatever, but they put the word, the SL, on the all wheel drive. So you have SL AWD. We bought a slod.
Like a slod.
SLAWD. That's what we got, a Nissan Rogue slod. Anyway, how did it drive, Carl?
It drives well, and it's reflected. Again, it feels like the solid, confident, refined vehicle that you would expect a big global alliance to produce versus Mitsubishi on its own, struggling a little more with those particular characteristics. So it's got plenty of power. The CVT, continuously variable transmission, again, something that Nissan's been doing long enough to where they've got it pretty well down, so it drives well. It doesn't have kind of the droning, lifeless traits that a lot of CVTs had, including Nissan's initially, but they've done it long enough.
No, we love it.
To give it some spirit.
I told my wife, I said, you know what? This is a continuously variable transmission, and it's not actually shifting. These are shift points just built in for us so that we can feel it. And I think that's just so brilliant, because an old car guy like me, if it doesn't do something that I'm, you know, used to, like, if I don't hear that, I think, oh we got to get it into the tranny shop, honey, because, you know, it's broken. Yeah. But,
Nissan. Stuck in one gear. Something's wrong.
Right.
It's stuck in a single gear.
Nissan makes a nice vehicle in the Rogue, and I'll guarantee that this Mitsubishi Outlander is every bit as nice in its own way, and for $25,000, worth a look, I'll tell you. All right, Carl, we're going to come back. There's a study out by IC Cars which shows which cars to buy new versus used. Really? All right. Carl Brower is going to tell us about it after this. Stay with us.
Now's the time to earn your bragging rights and rule the road in a powerful Dodge vehicle. With enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder J.D. Power named Dodge the number one ranked brand in initial quality and driver appeal for mass market brands. Join the brotherhood and experience the strength of Dodge muscle today. Visit Dodge.com or see your local Dodge dealer for great deals. Tied for initial quality study. For J.D. Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Our show brought to you in part by Subaru and the Outback. Go where love takes you. Carl Brower joining us. Carl writes for Forbes Autos, executive analyst, iccars.com. And they just did a study, by the way. Which cars to buy new versus used? That is a twist on that, Carl. Because usually you would say, oh, you buy these used. Wait a minute. New versus used. Yeah. It's messing with my head, man. So tell
well,
me.
Well, again, you and I are savvy enough with our dollars to know that depending, if you buy the right new car, you can do quite well. You and I had both done well with our Demons and all. I did okay with my 05 Ford GT. But typically you buy a new car, you're going to suffer the financial consequences. And, you know, the old saying, hey, they lose 20% of their value the minute you drive them off the lot. Well,
yes. Now I'm tracking. So like a good example for me would be a Porsche, an Audi. Actually, Porsche, not a good example because they hold their values pretty good. But
they do hold their values.
Depends on which one,
though. A lot of luxury brands do take a big hit very shortly after you drive them off the lot. But so, like, Porsche is not one of them.
So. Yeah. Well, give us an example then.
Sure. So here's an example, right? You could go buy a used Tesla Model 3. Hmm. But the average price of a used Tesla Model 3 is 2.1% or $923 below the price of a new Tesla Model 3.
Oh boy.
Why would you go buy a used Model 3 for under $1,000? You can get a brand new one that no one's ever owned before.
I got you.
That's the idea here, is that we looked at cars that had the smallest delta between slightly used ones and brand new ones. And, you know, a Toyota Tacoma, $1,500, 4.2% between new and used. It's like, well, just go buy a new one. If you're going to only save $1,500, that's like 2 or 3 months worth of payments, depending on what kind of loan you get. You get a brand new one. Kia Telluride, which I know you've talked about before, very successful car, that's $2,456 or 5.7% difference in the price. So those are, you know, the top three examples. You also got the Ford Ranger, the Jeep Gladiator, by the way.
I was going to say.
Well, buying a new one. Yeah.
You know what's funny?
It doesn't lose its value.
I was looking and I said to the guy, I go, well, what does the other Jeep dealer, you know, 20 miles up the road have in inventory? Because I was thinking maybe I want a diesel because they do make it with the Eco Diesel. And the guy says, well, here's one. And I said, and they want how much for a 2020? He goes, $41,995. I go, wait a minute, $41,995. I go, because it was like a stock. It was a sport with a manual transmission. It was a real stock base model. I go, what was the window sticker on that? And it was like $41,995. So it was like it had 9,000 miles on. It was pretty new, but they were still asking the same price as brand new. But you're right. Jeeps do hold their value. Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting.
So that's the whole point. So, you know, I see cars, we did this study, we're always trying to help people figure out how to best use their car buying dollar. And this is a case where it's like, look, normally we'd be all for going to get a used car, letting someone else take the hit, as they say, from the first 1, 2, 3 years. But in this case, you go buy a new one. You're going to do just as well or better buying new and get a brand new car for almost the same money as the used. Now, we also looked at the ones that you should not buy new, the ones that you should buy slightly used. And these were some crazy, crazy things, Alan. BMW 5 Series, 36.4% difference between new and used. $24,000 is what you save.
There you go.
So just like there's a $900 difference between the new and used Model 3, there's a $24,000 difference between the 5 Series sedan, new and used.
Right.
So that one, the Hyundai Sonata, Infiniti Q50, Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross, the Ford Mustang, believe it or not, drops a lot right after it's sold. Mercedes GLA, Infiniti Q50, a lot of premium cars on here, as we said. Premium models known because that luxury brand, there's a certain amount of luxury buyers, and let's just be honest, they're like, I don't buy used cars. No. So they don't have any interest in buying a used premium model. So that's why premium models have a much higher depreciation rate than non-premium luxury brands in most cases.
Maybe you can explain something to me. Can you please explain this to me? I bought 3 years ago a 2017 It was really new, a 2017 Ram 3500 four-wheel drive crew cab diesel truck loaded, right? So it had 3,300 miles on it. It was a year old. I paid $54,000 for it because I was towing a big trailer at the time, you know, going to trade shows. And I always thought, you know, I like to drive. I want to tow my trailer with all my gear and my junk. So I drove it and it had, what I put on it? I think it had 30,000 miles on it, maybe 33,000 miles. So I put 30,000 miles on it and 3 years. I sold it back to the same dealer that I bought it from for $54,000. Now, when does that happen? What is going on with trucks? Carl, what is going on with trucks?
Everyone wants a truck now, Alan. One of the things that has happened in the past 12 months with the pandemic and the upheaval and the civil unrest and all that, this has caused the truck market specifically, not just SUVs and trucks, but trucks specifically, open bed vehicles, to shoot through the roof in value, new and, in your case, used.
Right.
Both of them have shot up because when things get, let's just say, a little less confident in the world, people want trucks. Trucks represent the ability to be flexible, to quickly move things around if you want to move them, to go off-road, to tow something heavy to a new location if you suddenly wanted to,
right,
like your truck could have done. So people just want that stability that they can get from a truck to help substitute in for what they've lost in maybe the world they see around them.
So interesting. So last story before I say goodbye to you, because I know you got to go. You know that we ended up buying, me and a buddy of mine bought two of these TRX trucks, right?
Yeah.
But two, because we thought, well, there's got to be somebody that wants one. And we thought they're just that hot. This is the 702 horsepower, you know, monster. It's a Ford Raptor killer. It's the T-Rex from Ram. And it was $92,000 a piece. Because, of course, you know, they were the loaded, we got everything. Yeah, we got everything.
And stuff? Yeah.
You know, it's like, why get it if you're not going to buy everything? One of them, somebody had to have it and offered the dealership $30,000 over window sticker. You know that person owns it, right? They bought it. We sold it. Who does that? But you know, wow. Dodge and Ram and Jeep, they are doing stuff so right that people are, they got to have it. They can't stand it. All right. Anyway.
True.
Yep.
True. I've got a demon in my garage that has got over 5,000 miles, and I could probably sell it for more than I can pay for.
No question about it. Carl Brower, any of these stories can be found anywhere you want to send people?
Go to iSeeCars, I-S-E-E-C-A-R-S, iSeeCars.com, and you can read about which cars you should or should not buy new. And go to Forbes, and you'll read about the Mach 1 and the Outland.
There you go. iSeeCars.com for Carl Brower. Thank you, brother.
Hey, great being on with you, Alan, as always.
We'll be right back.
When you think Subaru, you think love. The 2021 Subaru Outback will make you fall in love with its state-of-the-art safety features, a spacious and comfortable interior, and convenient amenities, all ready for any adventure. Standard symmetrical all-wheel drive, plus up to 33 miles per gallon, 8.7 inches of ground clearance, X mode with hill descent control, and a direct-injected turbocharged Subaru boxer engine will make you love every adventure in your Outback. Love, it's what makes Subaru, Subaru. EPA estimated highway fuel economy for 2021 Subaru Outback non-turbo models. Actual mileage may vary. Turbocharged engine, 11.6 inch touchscreen available on select models.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, it's time to talk to a race car driver, a guy named Chris Buescher. He is a driver number 17 Ford Mustang for Roush Fenway Racing. Chris, welcome to the show. Let me tell you, first of all, I am a huge fan of Jack Roush. Many, many years ago, I worked with Jack Roush when he was at the kind of the height of his career, I guess you might say. But the one thing about Roush that I recognized is that he would look a person right in the eye, and he really cared about everybody he was talking to. And I thought to myself, you know, some of these guys, they, you know, they make it big in the world of motorsports or any business world. And then all of a sudden, you know, kind of their eyes, they go kind of glazed over, and a person is just another, you know, just another thing, you know, and all of a sudden they forget about people. But not Jack. Jack was the kind of guy that would look you right in the eye, and you mattered to him. So I don't know how much you've been able to work with Jack himself. I see you've been working with him for a number of years now, but is he still that way? What's he like now?
Yeah, well, first I appreciate having me on here.
Yeah.
Looking forward to chatting for a little bit. And I think you hit the nail on the head. So I've been a part of Roush Fenway Racing for 12 years now.
Woo.
Started off in a development program here. So what's pretty neat is, I think when you talk about Jack, he's passionate,
yep,
and he always has been. And I think he understands that for him to be successful in what he is passionate about, it takes people. And I think that's where that comes into play. Right. He has a knack for motivating people to do the best and be the best they can be. And I think that's something that has stayed with him for years. I think it's kind of just part of his personality. So yeah, it's been pretty amazing being there for as long as I've been. I really got to say thank you to him for also giving me the opportunity to break into the professional side of motorsports. You know, I've been doing this my whole life to the extent of it being a hobby, but you know, after I guess only for the last 12 years has it been on the way to a professional career.
Well, let's talk about right as you're, you know, kind of breaking into this whole professional thing, the world changes with this crazy COVID thing, of which I had COVID pneumonia. I was in the hospital for 5 days. I felt like a Bugs Bunny cartoon. I got run over by a, you know, an 18 wheeler, and I was flattened out. And you know, people are living their lives kind of in a certain amount of fear, and yet here you are, and here's, you know, our sport that we love so much, motorsports, getting so just almost wiped out by it. But what's it been like? What has it been like for you living in a COVID motorsport world?
Well, you know, I didn't mean to laugh at your analogy or at COVID, I guess, but the analogy is pretty spot on from what I've heard. I've been fortunate and most I know. So, you know, I think that it has forced us into some pretty massive changes.
Yeah.
And us in motorsports, we're actually fortunate in a way that our sport lets us space out a lot more than others, right? Especially once we're in the race car. Now, it is hard for our crew members, our pit crew members, to stay spaced out and be able to keep everybody through protocol, through all that.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, I will say NASCAR was the first major sport to come back, and it was because we are unique in the way that we can spread out. And with that, I think it really helped boost motorsports into the light of a lot of homes where people weren't that interested. And so I think we've actually seen a lot of gains through it. A lot of unique viewers have come in from areas that we've never had them before. And I think it's presented us with a decent amount of growth, you know, really opening people to a whole new world of sports. And so I think, you know, on the competition side of it, it's been tough. And I've told everybody that my last season, my first year in the 17 Cup car at Roush Fenway Racing, to me was harder than my rookie year in Cup. It was the hardest year of competition I've had to date.
Wow.
Simply because of the fact that we didn't have practice or qualifying.
Right.
You know, we showed up to a track. We had our sim tools and our programs to basically our common knowledge to set a car up ahead of time, and you went and raced. I mean, your first laps on track were 40 cars inches apart, 200 miles an hour, and that was it.
Yeah, you know, it's like it's almost like being in a cartoon, you know? It's like, what happened? You know, your whole life you watch things, you know, and you get used to things, you know, the way they are on television and, of course, for you in real life. And then all of a sudden, bam, here comes this new crazy world that you have to, you know, kind of bend and twist to. And wow. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about your, that dirt race at Bristol. That must have been pretty wild. And, of course, first race at COTA. We're talking with Chris Buescher, Roush Fenway Racing, also working with AutoTempest.com. We're sponsored by the same group, and I want to know How does that make you feel? I think it's a great website for people. And to me, that's important. Deliver value. We'll take a break. We're listening to The Drive and Chris Buescher. Stay with us. It is The Drive all across America.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's your host, Alan Taylor.
Talking with Chris Buescher, and he is driver number 17, Ford Mustang, Roush Fenway Racing, roushfenway.com on the web. I talked a little bit about autotempest.com, and Chris and I are both sponsored by Autotempest. But before we get to that, I just, you know, this whole Bristol dirt race, a friend of mine was talking about it, Stephen Cole Smith, who's a motorsports writer. I mean, maybe from your point of view, what was that like?
Wild. To put it in the simplest terms, we took asphalt cars and plucked them off the asphalt and put them on dirt. And there were a lot of things that we learned that did not go so smooth. Yeah. And then there was a lot of things that went way better than a lot of us anticipated. So,
was it fun? Did you just have a blast? Were you just yelling at the top of your lungs, or were you going, holy crap?
Well, a little bit of both. But it was a lot of fun. Yeah. I will say that I wish there was a couple of really track conditions where the only negative I got, just because of the time we were forced to run the race, we ended up with a lot of dust. And so if it weren't for the dust, so much of that was an absolute blast. And we've already said that we're going to do it next year as well. So that's going to be pretty neat.
That's awesome. All right, let's talk about the upcoming first race at COTA. You're going to have Auto Tempest on the side of the car there too. So congrats on that. Talk about that a little bit.
It'd be pretty awesome. Auto Tempest has just recently come on board of our 17 Mustangs. So we're excited to have them. Excited to be using their website. I'm a huge car guy. So I told them initially, I was like, man, I'm really excited to try and do a little bit of promotion with y'all and try and spread the message, because I'm upset that I did not know about it as I've gone through my many searches trying to find different vehicles, my latest being an old 79 Bronco. Man, would it have been so much easier. Yeah. So really excited to have them on board for COTA, our first time going down there. It's actually another home track for me, being from Texas, so excited to be able to go see family. It's a really, really nice facility. When you talk about top of the line facilities in motorsports, it's a very new one, but it is very, very nice, and they've done a great job with it. So definitely looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great show.
Well, that's great. So the question is now, when it's all said and done, you know, the season is underway, are you able to have like some sort of a plan, or do you literally every new race is like the first time? I mean, what's it like? I can't even imagine, because nothing is normal, right?
No, but at the same time, I've been doing it long enough now to where at least you know the track.
Yeah.
You know the little nuances with most of them. Bristol Dirt, your COTA, Indy Road Course, Nashville, all these tracks are tracks I haven't been to. And so they are going to be very unique and take a lot of prep. But for the most part, all these races, the hardest part is convincing yourself that lap one, everything is just right, and you can sail it into the corner as hard as you want to go and be ready to race. But it's challenging. The entire thing has been challenging. We've been able to overcome it pretty well. We're off to a pretty good start this season overall. We were in contention to win our race yesterday, and unfortunately it didn't work out as the Super Speedways get wild there at the end, but still off to a really good start with our group, and really looking forward to taking that Auto Tempest Mustang to COTA and you know, hopefully we can get a race win before then. But if not, we'll turn that into our first win of the season.
There you go. How about social media? Has it changed for you at all? Do you feel like there's more energy behind social media because people are, they're maybe stuck at home a little bit more? They're more, they're wanting to interact with you and other drivers more. What have you noticed? Because, I mean, you're a relatively young guy. This is your world, this social media world.
Well, I guess it's probably supposed to be, and I'm not as into it as most, but I have seen exactly what you're talking about. There is an uptick in people wanting to see more of the behind the scenes, honestly, a little less of the at track and the racing part of it, and especially now that we have very little content from our practice, our qualifying and meet and greets and all that. A lot of people are wanting to see what goes on behind the scenes, and so that's presented a unique opportunity to show a little bit about your personality, about right. what you do in your downtime. It has gotten even larger than it already was, and it's hard to keep up, honestly.
Yeah. No, it is exactly. Because it's not as easy to talk about all the things that are going on when you're literally having to pay close attention to every single facet of the changing racing world that you're in already. Listen, congratulations on your relationship with Roush Fenway. Chris Buescher, everybody. He's driver number 17 in the Ford Mustang. RoushFenway.com on the web. Also, AutoTempest.com. All the cars, one search. You'll see that on the side of his car. And also, we'll be talking about it on this radio show. It's a great, great resource for those searching for cars. Car, trucks, SUVs, whatever you're looking for. All right, I'm Alan Taylor. Chris, thank you. Best of luck. We'll be watching you out there at COTA.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Okie doke. This is The Drive. We'll be right back with more.
Brembo has been stopping champions on the track as well as drivers like you and me on the street for over 50 years. To zero braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. Brembo, the choice of champions and consumers for over 50 years.
This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto news, exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
And, of course, the one woman that can make me blush, BJ Colleen, which she just did moments ago. There's not many people that can have that effect on me with things they say. And you would never know it because she's as nice as she could be on the radio. But let me just tell you, there's another side to this woman, okay? She drives me crazy. You're so funny.
The sailor side.
Yeah, the sailor side. Oh, my gosh. You know, I am what I am today because of you. You have somehow morphed my mind the way I think. Oh, my gosh. All right.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, I think it's a good thing. That's why I love you so much. BJ Colleen, automotive journalist and... on the air, voice of reason. Off the air, voice of profanity. But anyway, that's another story.
Okay. They're just words, Alan.
I know. It's hilarious, though. But see, you are a wordsmith because weren't you a managing editor or something like that?
Yeah, I was an assistant managing editor and a copy editor and an English major. So words are my work.
There you go. See? Wordsmith you. So BJ says, let's talk about your new Jeep. All right, fair enough. I should talk about my new Jeep. So the other day, I got a wild hair, and you know where it was. And see, that's wordsmithing, by the way.
Definitely.
And I decided, all right, I've had it to death with this truck. And I want to tell you, first of all, let me just tell a story. I bought a Raptor, a 2012 Ford Raptor. It's the F-150. This is the one that has the 6.2 liter V8 engine, 411 horsepower. Fantastic. until you whip out your wallet. Now that we've got Joe Biden and the price of gas is one third more. Yep, one third more since about the last 3 months or so. And I went to fill up and I go, yeah, fill it up. Here's my credit card. It stops at $99. And I had three quarters of a tank. Three quarters of a tank because I was on reserve. For $100, you get three quarters of a tank. Now, I was doing that like twice a week. And I'm thinking, this is insanity. Because I've been driving a lot lately. Now, I love the truck. But 10 miles to the gallon is a thing of the past. Okay? It's literally a thing of the past. You should not get 10 miles to the gallon on anything unless it's got 18 wheels on it, if you know what I'm saying. Because even these new big 18-wheelers get some pretty good fuel economy. It's amazing. So 10 miles to the gallon, I thought, all right, it's killing me. So I started thinking, what do I want? What do I want? And I see this Jeep Gladiator, which is the pickup truck that's the Wrangler that is a pickup truck, right? And right. I know you know what it is, but in case for the audience don't know, I just tell them. So I saw it, and it was actually at the Dodge dealer, which is also the Jeep dealer, and it's a Lithia dealership, which is a big group. And here it was, and it was called Snazberry, the color. It's like a honest, and I thought, what? Yes, Snazberry. It's a deep burgundy. It's like if you held a deep burgundy bottle of wine up to the sun, and it is so beautiful. And it's got, listen to this, got orange accents, little orange rings. And I thought, orange? You know, and the more I looked at it, I thought, yeah, that's kind of cool because it's kind of a coppery orange. It's interesting. Anyway, and it says Mojave. And I remember when the Mojave came out, when they first showed it to us, the journalists, and it was like the high end. It's the highest priced Jeep Wrangler / Gladiator truck that Jeep makes because it's got everything on it, and it's got Fox dual shocks for jumping. So what is the difference, you're saying, BJ? See, I'm doing this interview all by myself. You could just sit back and relax.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. The difference is they make a Rubicon, which is top of the line, and that's for crawling on the Rubicon Trail, of which I know you've been on. It's rock crawling, right?
Yes, it
so
is.
They decided that they should make a vehicle for desert, like desert racing and driving fast and jumping and doing stuff that the Raptor is made for, with the big shocks and the softer suspension. And they did that, and they call it a Mojave. And so I thought to myself, that's me. I want the Baja 500. I want to jump and run and go fast. I don't want to crawl. I'm not a slow guy. I'm not the tortoise. I'm the hare. I want to be going quick. Anyway, so I got it. I bought it. I couldn't help myself. And there you go. I sold my Raptor to a dealer, believe it or not, in Modesto, California. He also bought my Toyota Supra. He also bought my Fiat 500. And I don't know that I'm even done yet. I might sell him some more cars. This guy is paying all the money. Dealers need used cars. And I tell you, if you got something nice, now's a good time to go get a bid. We'll take a break and talk more about this stuff. BJ Killeen, not involved in this segment, but thank you for being on the show with us. We'll be right back. To a hymn called Faith and Misery, and plead
the company lost the war today. Now's the time to earn your bragging rights and rule the road in a powerful Dodge vehicle. With enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder J.D. Power named Dodge the number one ranked brand in initial quality and driver appeal for mass market brands. Join the brotherhood and experience the strength of Dodge muscle today. Visit Dodge.com or see your local Dodge dealer for great deals. Tied for initial quality study. For J.D. Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
You're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor with BJ Killeen. Our show is brought to you in part by Subaru. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. And the new Outback. Go where love takes you. Check out Subaru. Fantastic machines. You know, BJ Killeen, we were talking about my new Jeep Gladiator Mojave, which is the... I'm not saying it's the top of the line because it's the top of the line, but it is the top of the line. I'm saying it's a kind of a... How do you want to put it? Purpose-built vehicle like they did with the Moab or the, what do they call it, the Rubicon? right?
And yes.
So mm-hmm. the Rubicon is designed obviously for rock crawling, and that's what you, you know, that's what you do if you want to go, you know, tread lightly. I'm not a tread lightly guy. I'm like a tear up the desert kind of guy. And you asked me during the commercial break what was a fuel economy, and I thought this was a big reason. I'm getting 10 miles to the gallon out of the Raptor. This gets 22 on the highway, 17 around town, which is double the fuel economy. So
are you actually getting that? Because I know you tend to have a little bit of what we call a lead foot.
Okay, let's change.
A little heavy on the throttle.
Let's change the subject, please. There's other things to talk about, all right?
Yeah.
I've only put 100 miles on it. I don't even know. But here's my thing. The first thing that happens is my friend David Borla from Borla Exhaust says, you need a new exhaust system on that. We've got this dual exhaust on it. You'll even get better fuel economy, right? Because it allows the vehicle to breathe a little bit better. And I'm looking at it going, yeah. He goes, where do you want me to send it? And I'm like, okay, here's my address. $1,500 for this beautiful exhaust system. I'm going to install it myself. It's a cat back, so catalytic converter back, and it all just bolts on. Gorgeous. And if you go to Borla.com, I think Borla Performance or whatever it is, you guys got to look it up. B-O-R-L-A, Borla Exhaust. They actually have the sound because they tune their exhaust sound, right? So they have the sound of this exhaust sounds like this, and then they, and there it goes down the road, and then they got, you know, they got all the different types of sounds so you can hear it when you're going. No droning sounds. They're just really cool sounded. Like they tune it like they tune a musical instrument. Did you know that? That's what Borla does. So
yes, absolutely. You know, Borla is the king when it comes to exhaust. He's been in it the longest. He's the professor.
Yep.
And they know what they're doing. So you got a good product, no question.
It's so funny. And so, yes, I'm going to put this exhaust on. And I picked the one that was, you know, kind of made it sound a little hot roddy. And then another guy says, hey, we've got this device, of which I need to check it out before I talk about it. It has to do with, you know, you plug it in and it has to do with the electronic throttle. It's only $289. He goes, let me send you one. You can try it out. So he's going to send it. I'm going to plug it in. Supposed to give it a better throttle response, which makes it feel like it's got more horsepower. There's so many cool products aftermarket, and we got screwed out of not being able to go to SEMA last year because of COVID. You know what I mean?
I totally agree. That's exactly what I was going to say, too, because that's where you get all the information on what's new and the fact that we couldn't go last year, but they're making big plans for this year.
Yeah, so exactly.
We'll be there once again.
So the other thing, to come back to your thing about me and horsepower and all that, you know, it's got 285 horsepower. It's got a 3.6 liter V6, 8-speed automatic transmission. But I got to tell you, it's got plenty of get up and go. I was really surprised, very happy with it. I thought, yeah, that'll work. You know, and I'm sure when you put your, you know, you mash your big old toes down on that gas pedal, it's going to, you know, cost you at the fuel pump. But I'm thinking about putting a supercharger on it, which will then, you know, probably add, I don't know, 75 or 80 horsepower anyway, maybe more. So am I totally concerned about the fuel economy? If I can get 15 to 18 miles to the gallon driving the way Alan drives, I would be really happy. Because let me just tell you, the Raptor, when I drove it the way Alan drives, it didn't even get 10. I was into the single digits. So, yes. You know,
the other point about that Gladiator vehicle is the fact that it's incredible off-road, as most Jeep vehicles are. Man. So have you really gone anywhere?
Well, again, allow me to take another break and tell you the rest of the story. Jeep Gladiator 2021 window sticker, $58,000. They got some deals going right now. I actually got a little deal on it. Check it out. The Mojave is the top of the line. Absolutely beautiful. Snazberry, love it.
When you think Subaru, you think love. The 2021 Subaru Outback gives you state-of-the-art active safety technology for extra confidence on every drive. You can count on the roomy comfort and impressive cargo space, standard raised roof rails with enhanced tie-down points, and Subaru Starlink Multimedia with an 11.6-inch high-resolution touchscreen to wrap your experience with love for your Outback. love. It's what makes Subaru, Subaru. EPA estimated highway fuel economy for 2021 Subaru Outback non-turbo models. Actual mileage may vary. Turbocharged engine, 11.6-inch touchscreen available on select models.
Little sister, don't you? Little sister, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Got my little sister on the line here, BJ Colleen. Barbie, I notice your friends on Facebook, some of them call you Barbie. What's going on with that? I know that's your name.
Yeah, it is, but only a chosen few get to call me that.
It's
and
so,
as much as I love you, you're not on the list.
It's so cute, though, because when I think of a little cute Barbie, she's about 4 years old, eating a big ice cream cone. Anyway.
I wish. You know, it's funny, you're going on about the color of the vehicle, and way back when I was in Motor Trend days and I was in charge of all the cars, we ordered a Chevy pickup, and this was the smaller ones way back, the S10, I believe it was called, and it came in a raspberry color.
Right.
And I always got the brighter colors because they were easy to photograph. You had a black car, a gray car,
right,
a white car. They didn't come out well in the magazine. So we got a long-term Chevy S10 pickup, and it was this kind of, I came in like a magenta pink. I mean, it was really stand out in the crowd.
I think I kind of remember that color, and it wasn't very.
Do.
Yeah,
I know, it was a hot pink, and none of the guys would drive it.
That's so funny.
They'd take it for photos, and I was the only one that would drive the car around because they were all just too embarrassed to be driving around in this hot pink pickup truck.
That is so funny.
But I loved it because I love pickup trucks, and I love that vehicle. It was a lot of fun to have, and it's like, I'll take it. I don't care. It was always the last one picked, and I liked it. So
that is funny. Well, you know, you asked me if I've gone off-roading with the Wrangler yet, or yes. I should say the Gladiator, which is a Gladiator is a Wrangler truck. I have not, because I've only had it for, you know, a few days. But the one thing I have done is I've actually driven it around corners just to see how much body roll it had, because, you know, some of these things that they take a Jeep, which you got to be careful because, you know, they're not obviously designed for cornering, but if you stretch it out and make the wheelbase longer, it actually gives it quite a nice ride. So this Gladiator truck really has a good ride in comparison to the shorter wheelbase two-door Wrangler and four-door Wrangler. They have these different wheelbases, and then the Gladiator's longer, yet it really goes down the road nice, smooth, quite wonderful. And then I went around some corners, and I was like, okay, are we going to roll it with 88 miles on it? I thought, here we go, if ever it's going to happen now. And I went around this corner pretty darn fast, and I was amazed at how well it cornered. Now, it could be because it's got this Mojave, you know, these racing shocks from Fox. It's got dual shocks in the back, two on each side, and some big old fat ones on the front. And there's even a reservoir for the fluid, because it's designed, they actually designed this thing to get it airborne. Now, they don't like you talking about that, but that's what you do when you go out desert. You're constantly jumping over things, and you're moving, you know, fast. And so I thought, this thing really handles nice. So for the on-road presence, I will tell you that I am so pleased, because it's not this lumbering little slow Jeep thing that you might think, because Jeeps originally back in the, you know, in the day when they were little four-cylinder flathead things, they were just, you know, almost like a utilitarian type of a tractor that you had two seats in or more, you know. And then they've evolved to this machine that goes down the road 80 miles an hour. Nice. Now, I also love that it's got these two panels on the hardtop that I can remove, which go from the front of the windshield to behind the driver's head. You take these two little, like almost like T-tops. Remember T-tops? You take those two panels.
I sure do.
Yeah. You take these T-tops off and you put them in this little bag, and you put it in the back seat or in the back of the truck, and you literally are driving a convertible, because everything over your head is gone. There's no bar. It's just straight across all the way. And then you could take the rest of the half cab off if you want to, and then you really have a full-on convertible. But it's still 33 degrees out in the morning, so I didn't take the back half off. But I got to tell you, it keeps on. It's almost like the everlasting gobstopper. It just keeps on pleasing me, knowing that it is a Jeep, and it is. Now, this one is desert rated, where the other ones are trail rated. So this one is desert rated, which is a different designation. But you know a Jeep's going to do what Jeep does. So it's more important to me that it does everything else good too, if you know what I mean. I know it's going to deliver. Yes. So that's the answer.
The point you brought up about having a better ride quality, and that is one of the shortcomings of the Jeep Wranglers, and it's got such a short wheelbase that on the road, it is a very choppy, not the most comfortable ride.
Right.
So by stretching that wheelbase and adding that bed on the back, I can imagine that it's actually really quite comfortable in there. So
that's a valid point. If there's one drawback, because I went from a one-ton dually diesel Ram crew cab four-wheel drive, from that I could tow, you know, a small mountain. I went into the Raptor, which only had like a 7,000 pound towing rating because of these soft shocks, and I hooked my tractor on it with a trailer, and the back end was like, you know, it looked like a doodle bug. I don't know. It looked like a bug with the back end hanging down. And then when I get this one, this only has like a 4,500 pound rating, maybe 5,000 pounds. I'm not sure. I still haven't been able to figure that out because it's the same thing. It's got these softer shocks for, you know, jumping and a different style of shocks. The Jeep Gladiator does have, with the sport model, one that'll tow 6,000 pounds, but not the Moab. It doesn't have a great towing rating, which perturbs me a little bit, which is why I'll probably keep my 3/4 ton four-wheel drive, 454 powered Suburban that I've had that has 400,000 or 500,000 miles. I don't even know. Do me a favor, would you? I know you wanted to talk about something. Can we do that? One more segment?
Yeah, sure.
I have been talking the whole damn time.
Come along for the ride. You know that.
I love you. You're great. You guys, go out and check out the Jeep Gladiator. If you're thinking about buying a midsize truck, really enjoy it. I just put a smile on my face, got rid of my Supra, which had made me have a frown on my face. You know, we'll be right back. Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
So our show brought to you in part by AutoTempest.com. And you're like, what is AutoTempest? Well, I got to tell you, if you're searching for a car, you just want to do some homework on the car you may want to sell, you can go to all these different, you know, websites, you know, True Car and Carvana and all these, you know, all over the place. Or you can visit one site, AutoTempest.com. All the cars, one search. Yeah, it checks them all. AutoTempest.com. So we're working with them now and proud of it. BJ Colleen is joining me, and I apologize for sucking up the first half hour talking about myself and my new Jeep. Anyway, so what's going on in the automotive industry that I've been missing because I'm COVID bound, like the rest of us?
Actually, a lot of it's been very quiet, mostly because nobody's got any chips to produce vehicles. So everybody's kind of shutting their plants down a little bit. Mm. And the supply on lots is just the lowest it's ever been. It's just crazy. People are wanting cars. And you're absolutely right, what you said earlier in the show, that everybody's begging for used vehicles and new vehicles. It's crazy. But I like to go back and just talk about a three-way fight that's been going on pretty much since the beginning of time. And I'm talking about the Mustang Camaro Challenger fight.
Mm.
Because it's fascinating how the numbers have changed and how people's opinions have changed. And actually in 2020, Ford was the one that came out ahead in the little pony car wars, is what we've always called it. They sold 61,000 Mustangs in 2020, which is pretty good. But when you think about it, from 2019, they sold 72,000. And the best year that Mustang ever had in its whole career was the year 1966. Take a guess how many Mustangs they sold when the Mustang first came out.
I couldn't even begin to imagine.
607,000 Mustangs they sold that year.
Wow.
So the sales now are 10% of what it was at the highest, which just goes to show you that people are thinking twice about getting cars with high horsepower and bad fuel economy, even though the Mustangs and these cars nowadays are not bad fuel economy, but they're not a hybrid or electric vehicle or something along those lines.
Well, now they are, but they call it a Mach-E, right?
That's true. Right. Yeah. And they have to, it's change or die. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Now Camaro came in at 29,000 units for last year, and which is about a third less than what they sold the year before.
Wow.
And Camaro sales have been slowly declining. In 2014, they hit a high of 86,000. So they're not doing as well as Mustang. And I don't know if it's because they haven't really refreshed it lately, or it just doesn't have the same cachet as the Mustang does. Yeah. But I always thought it's interesting. They're even talking about rumors of maybe canceling it again or it coming back as an electric vehicle.
Oh, my God.
I know. Oh, I know.
Well, General Motors has got this whole new electric. They're jonesing to be an electric car company and then some. I don't know if you saw that newest thing. Like they're getting into all kinds of things. And Mary Barra, who's the chairman of the board, she's got some big plans for General Motors. And it's like, I'm watching this going, oh my goodness, they're doing this, you know?
Yep.
The world is changing and we're sitting back watching it. This next couple of years for the auto industry, maybe the weirdest couple of years we've had in a long, long time.
Yep. Between the fight for alternative options to fossil fuel and Chevy's coming out with a Silverado EV, a pickup truck.
Right.
I don't know. It's going to leave the steel industry because aluminum is obviously a lot lighter weight, but how are they going to ever backtrack on all the bad things they said about aluminum and Ford's vehicles when they're going to start using it too? So.
They have, you know what? At some point, they're going to have to go, you know what? Gosh, in further review, we realize that's smart. You know, what can they do? You're right, because they were dogging them out.
Oh, and they still are. I mean, the commercials for steel and how great steel is, and you know, I understand that because they got caught with their pants down because Ford's all pretty much got the EV already out, but they're not expecting the Silverado to come out until early 2023 as a 24 model. So they're still busting their humps to try and get this done, even though Ford's is pretty much done. But they're talking about offering a range of more than 400 miles on a full charge on the Silverado, you know, you got to have it, a work truck, because if you don't, and you're trying to get to someplace to a work site and you don't have the power, you're out of luck.
Right,
so it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
No question.
So, yeah.
Well, I'm wondering, you didn't have the stats on when the Camaro first came out? Because I don't think it was, I think the Mustang, they nailed it so big with that car.
Yep.
And that it, you know, poor Camaro's always been trying to catch up, you know?
Camaro's best year was 79 and they sold 282,000 units. Now, the Challenger's best year was 1970, where they only sold 77,000. So they've never really been at the level with the Camaro and the Mustang. They just don't have the history behind there, although they definitely have some. But they're even talking about whether the Challenger is going to continue as a vehicle from the Stellantis group. So
really?
That's what they're saying. So we know that the Mustang is the pony car that has been in continuous production the longest. We know that the Camaro took a little hiatus for a couple of years, and the Challenger took a hiatus for a long time. But Challenger sold 52,000, so they did better than the Camaro did. So it's a pony car war that's been going on for decades, and maybe at some point it won't even exist anymore. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future.
You know, I found an interview that I did with Carol Shelby in the year 2000. And so that would have been 21 years ago. And it was at Barrett Jackson, so it would have been January 21 years ago. And Carol Shelby talked about, and he actually says this, he goes, you know, 20 years from now, they're going to have electric cars and hybrid cars. And if you look back, you know, he nailed it. So I'm going to play that interview. I'm actually going to go to Shelby because I've got a Shelby Mustang sitting over there getting a special package done, getting ready to get done, actually, finally, because the parts were held up because of COVID. Anyway, but we're going to revisit that interview I did with Carol and show exactly how right he was 20 years ago, because he nailed it. And it's funny because, you know, the man was a visionary. There's no question about it. He totally could see what was coming just ahead of the curve, if you know what I mean. Anyway.
Yes, he really was. And I would love to hear that interview, because it's amazing what people think. And then, you know, 20 years from now, you're like, I don't believe it. I'll believe it when I see it.
Right.
Here we are, you know, living it with electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles and e-fuels and hydrogen. So, I hope that we're alive still, Alan, when we see the big change come over. So I don't know if it's how it's going to happen, but something's going to change. That's for sure.
Boy, it's we're right on the precipice. All right, BJ Killeen, thank you so much. You're always fun. Thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
We'll be right back. It is The Drive.
Brembo has been stopping champions on the track, as well as drivers like you and me on the street, for over 50 years. To zero braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. Brembo, the choice of champions and consumers for over 50 years.
Hey, brother, there's an endless road to rediscover.
Well, you're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. My brother right now, George Kennedy III. And I do say I had COVID. I was in the hospital for 5 days. I kept getting texts from this brother saying, how you doing, man? You making it through? And so, George, thank you for that. That was
you bet, man. No, glad to hear you're back at it.
It was a rough go, let me just tell you. But I'm feeling good again. You know, you get this fog, this COVID fog. Me and my wife got this stupid freaking disease at the same time, and this virus. And we were down for like 3 weeks. It was tough. But my wife said this morning, she goes, you know what? I feel better than I felt in a long time. And I think what happens is that, you know, your body kind of really has to come rushing to your defense. And of course, I went to the hospital and I was there for 5 days and they gave me Regeneron and all this stuff that I don't even know what the hell it is. But still my body had to fight back. And so the immune system now is like, you know, extra good. And so I have to say, I have this kind of new zest for life right this moment. So, yeah, it's good. I'm glad to be back.
Glad to hear, man.
Yeah, thank you. So I understand you are driving a vehicle that sometimes people just kind of go, ho-hum, all right, no big deal, Chevrolet Suburban. But these are the vehicles that are like the longest lasting and the most amount of miles. I saw something the other day about, out of all the vehicles out there in the freaking world right now, the ones that have the most miles on them are Chevy Suburbans. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of miles. I own 2 Chevy Suburbans, by the way. 2, yeah, not, I mean, not
it's,
1.
It's funny when you think about like the last 2 decades of 3-row SUVs, right? You've got your Highlanders, you've got your Pilots. You know, there's been this obvious push towards more car-based crossover SUVs for driving compliance and for fuel economy. But at the end of the day, there are certain times that you need a lot of cargo space. You need a lot of passenger space. You need the ability to tow something.
Something
and
big,
that's
yeah.
where these full-size truck-based SUVs still have a role.
Yeah. No question about it. Now, like I said, a lot of people are like, Chevy Suburban, ho-hum, what's so new about that? But for 2021, evidently, they've been working their tail off to try and make it, you know, that much better. Tell us about it.
Yeah, sure. So it's, you know, it's got a lot of the latest features from GM. It's got wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, which I thought was great. It's got a couple features that I feel like are solutions in search of a problem, like the power moving center console. But all in all, you know, what's important for me is that the controls layout, the radio and climate controls, all the dials, they're the same as you would find in the previous Suburban, even though it's got a new sort of interior design.
Right.
And it's the same as you would find in one of the trucks. And I think that's really important. I have a feeling that these are going to be some of the last vehicles that have like a really basic controls layout and redundant controls to all of the touchscreen controls, because it comes standard with a 10.2 inch touchscreen. So they're doing a great job of making sure in a vehicle this big, you can do that, you know, having all this tech, but then having the redundant hard controls too. So it really is fitting that almost like utilitarian tool that these vehicles are often used as.
Right. Well, and Mary Barra, the chairman of General Motors, on the cover of Time magazine, standing next to the new Hummer made by GMC now, instead of the brand Hummer, it's GMC Hummer. But you're right. I think this generation of Suburbans, the next generation is going to be like, what? Whoa, what's going on here? This is not, the old familiar Suburban. Well,
Yeah, I mean, look at where the new Escalade is that just came out and how that's far more advanced. You know, they're targeting a higher net worth buyer. But that's probably where you're going to see the next generation Suburban be, sort of as you look at that watershed of features and technology.
Right. Well, so drivetrain-wise, pretty much the same?
Yes and no. You know, you get the 5.3-liter V8 as standard equipment. It's available with the 6.2-liter V8. That makes 420 horsepower. But we drove the model with the new optional Duramax diesel inline six.
Oh, now you're talking, baby.
Yeah.
So
it makes, I think, something like 277 horsepower, which that doesn't sound like a lot, but it makes 460 pound feet of torque.
Right.
And that's the same amount of torque as the high feature V8.
Right. And diesel torque is a whole different animal.
Right. Yep. Right. But when you break it down, the top towing vehicle, I'm pretty sure based on their very broad trailering calculator, was the 5.3-liter V8 with the max tow package, which gives you 8,300 pounds of towing. That's not insignificant.
No, that's good, actually. That's that's really amazing. By the way, I just looked it up. 100 most influential companies, Time magazine, General Motors CEO Mary Barra is engineering a greener future, and she's standing next to that Hummer and looking very sexy in her black outfit with gigantic high heel shoes, actually, I'm kind of proud of what this woman has done for General Motors. She has kind of moved it. And it's like just this giant battleship that just seemed like it was so hard to turn. And she's turning it. Now, whether I love electric or not, that's another story, but she's turning this company and she's not forgetting the roots of what it's all about. Still making, of course, vehicles like we're talking about right now, the 2021 Chevrolet Suburban, the diesel. So I want to know the drivability when we come back. We're talking to George Kennedy. He is co-founder of Cartender. He also works with Car Gurus, Boston Globe, U.S. News and World Report. He's an automotive journalist. We'll be right back.
Now's the time to earn your bragging rights and rule the road in a powerful Dodge vehicle. With enough style, horsepower, and performance to make your muscle car dreams come true, it's no wonder J.D. Power named Dodge the number one ranked brand in initial quality and driver appeal for mass market brands. Join the brotherhood and experience the strength of Dodge muscle today. Visit Dodge.com or see your local Dodge dealer for great deals. Tied for initial quality study. For J.D. Power 2020 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Our show brought to you in part by Subaru and the new Outback. Go where love takes you. Subaru doing a great job. George Kennedy III joining us and talking about the 2021 Suburban from Chevrolet. He's driving the one with the inline six-cylinder diesel, which I got to tell you, I really, really love that powertrain. And I drove it was a crew cab, and I think we were doing like 29 miles to the gallon out of a crew cab, four-wheel drive truck. I thought to myself, that is fantastic. You know, I mean, the Jeep, I just bought a Jeep Gladiator. You know, you get like 19. How can you get such good fuel economy out of these big vehicles? And they don't seem to, a lot of these automakers, and they make the Gladiator in a diesel that gets better fuel economy. But it seems like the gas engines, they just somehow I don't know. They're not bringing them up far enough, in my opinion.
Well, but I think part of it for the diesel, I mean, you know, you talk about the Gladiator, that's got a 9-speed automatic. Every engine in a Suburban comes with a 10-speed automatic. And that's really key for these diesel engines, where there is a pretty finite sweet spot for power and efficiency. And the 10-speed makes sure to keep it in that power band at all times.
Right. I think mine's an 8-speed, by the way.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But anyway, the 10-speed transmission that they, I believe this is the one they're sharing with Ford. It's a fantastic transmission. It really is. And talk about when you're keeping it in the power band. I remember when I had a 3-speed automatic transmission and it's like, you know, it's like I would have to make a run for the hill. If I had a trailer, make a run for the hill, and then it would get down to like 55. And if I downshifted, it was like, the engine was screaming. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, going uphill too, forget it if you miss a gear, right?
Yeah, right. That's what I'm talking about. Would I say going downhill? I don't know, going uphill. But the point is that when I downshifted, it was like, it was insane. And I always thought to myself, I'm going to blow this thing up. But, and then on the way down, you have to use the same gear going down a hill that you go up a hill in. Otherwise, you can kind of, the thing can run away. You know, you don't want to have
brakes give out. You don't have that problem with this at all. I mean, it has, like I said, V8 level torque. And you feel it. It, you know, it jumps off the line pretty quickly. It has no problem getting up to highway speeds, you know, briskly.
Yep.
You know, it has a lot of power, you know, and on top of that, it's got great brakes. It's got powerful yet kind of soft, refined, and accurate brakes. It's all sort of part of that truck underpinning. You know, yep. You get in a modern Silverado and you're going to find similarly strong but accurate brakes.
Yep.
And there's a flip side to the truck underpinnings, and that is this is going to be a family hauling SUV. And in a lot of ways, it still drives like a truck. There's a lot of body roll in corners. If there's not a lot of load in terms of any gear or people, there's still a bit of chatter going over bumps in the road. But for the most part, it's extremely soft, not entirely refined, but pretty soft ride. But you do see those truck tendencies in driving it.
Well, and remember, this goes the Suburban to a Denali in a GMC form and a Cadillac Escalade in Cadillac form. And so if you want to continue to get more and more comfort out of the machine, they can do it, but the price goes up. My sister, I think about 2 years ago, bought a Suburban, and I was like, my gosh, that's an incredible deal. I think hers was like $52,000. How much was this one? I'm just curious.
So the Suburban starts at $51,700.
Yeah.
Right. That's for the LS.
Right.
Then you've got LT, the Z71, the Sporty RST. And then ours was the range topping High Country. And that came with everything. That starts at $72,300. Four wheel drive, like we had, $75,300. And when you add in the diesel engine and the High Country Deluxe package with all of these other creature comforts, our sticker price was $81,700.
Oh my God. You can really pack those
suckers. But keep in mind, you know, when you think of like, well, the High Country is their quote unquote luxury minded trim.
Right.
You know, the Range Rover, the big Range Rover starts at $91,000. And where you see that big difference is sort of the fit and finish. Yep, you know, it looks pretty inside the Suburban, but there are definitely some hard plastics.
But you give it some big thumbs up.
Yeah, it's great. You know, I don't love the current design trend, you know, kind of the in-your-face design trend. But as a, you know, there's few other vehicles on the market today that offer as much cargo space, passenger space, and helpful features as the Suburban does right now.
Right on. All right. Well, George, thank you. I got a text from one of my kids. Hold on a second here. He says, Dad, don't forget, tell everybody to vote on the... what is it? Let's see here. It's called, let's make this happen. Military Mobility. Check out Military Mobility. And this is a program. They're trying to win a Defender truck for our military veterans. Okay, son, I did it. At Military Mobility. Go check it out if you're interested in that for helping out our veterans. George Kennedy, absolutely. Thank you, sir. Really appreciate it. That's about it for me this week. The Drive. We'll be back next week. Me back maybe in my normal state, which is insane, but I'm feeling better. All right. We'll see you next week, everybody. Thanks for listening.
When you think Subaru, you think love. The 2021 Subaru Outback will make you fall in love with its state-of-the-art safety features, a spacious and comfortable interior, and convenient amenities, all ready for any adventure. Standard symmetrical all-wheel drive, plus up to 33 miles per gallon, 8.7 inches of ground clearance, X-Mode with hill descent control, and a direct-injected turbocharged Subaru Boxer engine will make you love every adventure in your Outback. Love, it's what makes Subaru, Subaru. EPA estimated highway fuel economy for 2021 Subaru Outback non-turbo models. Actual mileage may vary. Turbocharged engine and 11.6-inch touchscreen available on select models.